previously on Worlds Away.
Gut check me. How long do you think this will take?
A few hours. But I'm assuming at some point we will need to pick up the pace.
We should tell them to leave if we're not back by then.
It's time to go. No more contingencies.
I do think, however, as you're walking toward this device, or maybe you're looking at it and you have the scanner out, you can see as you approach a silhouette on the ground.
I think if it's in my way, I'm not going to treat it like it's like a weapon or anything, but I'm not going to go out of my way to step on it. So I might give it like a few feet's worth of berth. But
and I think what you see when you approach it, Mara, is it is a, I mean, I'd say like husk is the best way I describe it, but it is the carapace of a dead glow crawler.
I think we see Leela walk up to that board with the paper on it, and she writes a new statement next to all of the others.
At this point, do we see what she writes?
Humanity must safeguard all species of life on the planets we inhabit.
So I think at this point, the door opens. And maybe it's like these kind of double doors. Maybe it's a very ceremonial room you're in.
I think I look up and see the principles on the board, and I just smile. Let's be prepared to rewrite history. Again.
Sure you don't want keep your cool?
I'm pretty sure.
Nine.
That's pretty good, dude. Yeah.
I'm going to take... Oh, man, I'm going to regret this later. I know I'm going to regret this later. You've left something behind. The Space Master will tell you what.
That's okay. The worst thing you could have picked.
Oh, my God. There was a wrong answer, actually, and you picked it.
Is it fair to say that Mara had to go a little further, and so maybe I planted my device and I have the ability to like wait to see that signal come online, that I'm just like staying over there in the bunker before like moving on to the next thing?
Oh, like that way you know what the about how to time it?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you could do that.
So I wonder if... Hey, John, I've never pulled this card with you before.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. But
I don't know if you know this. It's my birthday tomorrow.
It is his birthday tomorrow.
So I wonder if I can, for once, just pull this on you as the GM and you totally be okay with it. So I wonder if, as I'm sitting here in the bunkers, waiting for that signal to come through.
We all sing Arno happy birthday.
No. As I'm looking, as I'm looking through the gaps in the bunkers to see if there's like a sentry or anyone else that's walking by, if as I look from left, forward, right, back to forward, back to left, the spaces between the bunkers start to blend a little bit, and Arno starts to feel like the gaps connect, and he feels like he's in a maze.
If it helps you make your decision, remember that not only is it Mike's birthday tomorrow, but that this episode is going to air on Arno's birthday. So I think
it's really
important. I don't know Arno's birthday.
Baby, we have not established. You've never said that. What are you doing?
So just if that sweetens the pot. No.
It doesn't, but I think I'll go along with it anyways.
Fuck yeah.
He's a birthday softie. You heard it here first.
That's right.
I think it doesn't happen as you're waiting. I think it happens after you stop waiting. I think you see the second circle light up, and I think you know, you start to go to move. And I think that's when you like move into the maze, right? You're kind of moving from the left side to the right side to reacquire where the guard is to see when you're clear to move south toward the production facility. And I think it feels like the spaces that you had between the bunkers start to close up. And I think the dust at your feet, which has these natural ripples in it from whatever force blasted it from the crater or from whatever meager wind this planet's atmosphere is able to produce. But I think as your surroundings start to close in around you, it also looks like you're standing, or better, sinking into rough water.
Oh, shit.
At this point, I want to cut back to Ascension. At this point, I think the delegates are in their seats. And Leela and Nasir, you are standing in the focal point of this semicircular room. And next to you is the large document or the board that has this list of principles on it. What do you do or say next?
I think I'll step sort of forward or to the head of the, it's probably a round table. I'll rise, right, so that I can be seen. Esteemed delegates of humanity, we appreciate the work that we have accomplished thus far in our efforts towards mutual peace and the betterment of our species. We have a few items remaining for critical business today. And before we get to the most important of them, we are going to seek first to reach agreement on the stated principles upon which we have been working this last week. And I think I'll gesture to the board. Are there any adjustments, additions, or objections to be made to the final list before it is to be put to a vote?
I think Leela raises her hand and stands to be recognized.
Miss Leela Malik. There's a huge smile on Nasir's face.
So I think Leela turns to the group and gestures to her principal, which is maybe near the bottom, as we said, and you know, maybe not everyone has even noticed it yet. I think she reads out the statement and says, "Humanity must safeguard all species of life on the planets we inhabit. Much of what we have discussed these past few days has been concerned with humanity, our desires, our future, and our coexistence with each other. However, we must not forget the existence of other sentient species within our galaxy. It is beyond time that we all recognize the importance of other species of life and pledge that the furtherance of humanity's goals does not degrade the existence of the life that's already here."
John, what's the initial reaction of the crowd? Because this is, I believe, unless someone else has a principle that they intend to propose that isn't on this board, this is the only, like, truly new tenant that we're discussing.
So to answer your question, Mo, I think the initial reaction that you most see is one of confusion. I think your sense is that the delegates don't understand where this is coming from or why this would be added to the board, given what they see as the importance of the rest of the discussion to humanity.
Okay.
But my question for you, Leela, is the only move I think that makes sense here is manipulate, which is using promises, guile, or charm to get someone to do what you want. But in order for that to happen, I think you have to say what you want, which is for them to agree to your principle, but also what you're willing to give. And I'm just wondering if you add anything to your speech in terms of that or what else you say to signify what Leela is willing to give here. And I don't think it has to be like an exchange, like so transactionally, but just what's being put on the table here.
I'm thinking. Open to ideas.
Because I think just to put this into perspective, where they're coming from is, you know, the room is not thinking of Kairos. The room is not thinking of Fronia.
Yeah. So I think Leela sees the kind of maybe confusion coming from the room. And I think she continues. I know this is not necessarily what many of you expected to be discussing today, but I raise it because I think it's critical to how we move forward. I think she points to Nasir's statement, Lustra is the inheritance of all future generations of humankind. And she says, our pursuit of Lustra, the reason that we're on these planets in the Verge, has led to the destruction of countless habitats and the possible extinction of various life forms. This isn't the first time we've confronted this issue. We faced similar questions on Earth during the climate catastrophes. We have outlined many rights that our human settlements will have, rights of free trade, of free association, and degrees of independence. We have talked about what we owe each other and how we as a single species must act in concert in certain situations. But each decision we make affects not just our species and our future generations. It also impacts those around us, many of whom don't have voices the way we do. We have all outlined our beliefs, and I ask that you all consider this proposal because it will mean so much to not just humans, but to other species as well. This is a hallmark of the next stage of our development as a species. We owe it to ourselves and to our own future generations to ensure that we act as responsible stewards of the galaxy as a whole.
Go ahead and roll plus slick.
All right. I'm not very slick.
Ooh.
But let's give it a try.
Okay.
Ooh. Hell yeah.
That's fucking 11. It's pretty fucking slick.
So on a 10 plus, they can either accept your offer at face value, or they can ask you to promise something and do what you want if you agree. I think this will take a little different shape than usual, but I think that for now, President Lee actually stands and she says, thank you, Leela. We will consider your proposal earnestly. And I think she takes a seat and you see nods from the other delegates. So I think after President Lee sits down, Katia LeClaire actually stands up and walks up to the board and begins striking through parts of her statement. And what previously read, no power may interfere with another planet's politics or leadership, she now changed to say, each planet shall provide due respect to each other's politics and leadership, and then sits back down.
It's the power of a protein bar, baby.
So I think after they both sit down, my question for the two of you is there anything else that you say or do to move the delegates here in favor of the proposals on this wall and of your new suggestion for how the galaxy will be structured after this treaty? And kind of to put that another way, what I want to understand is, or what I want the delegates to understand, is what is the world of convergence going to look like after this treaty is signed? or in the future that occurs after this treaty is signed. And I think this is the chance to describe and paint that and see who's on board.
I have one additional proposal. In addition to the core principles stated and signed here, in the interest of posterity and the generations of humanity to come, I would like to propose that we once again follow in the steps of our ancestors, and we dare to dream. That we establish a governing body which represents all members of humanity equally, and ensures the basic tenets of our rights are maintained, and that no planet, homeworld or otherwise, shall ever become a tyrant over any part of the species. I was born on Earth and raised in the shadow of civilizations gone for thousands of years, but which had been reborn over and over again. I came to Aventine before we had other colonies and saw humanity spread across the verge. And now I have returned and can truly say I have found a joy I have not known since the death of my son, in being amongst its people, in seeing humanity reach across the stars again. So I propose an interplanetary council with representatives from every planet humans inhabit, whose purpose is to uphold these core principles, and who are the only entity in the galaxy who wield the force to enforce them. I call for the decommissioning of wartime fleets and for the creation of the greatest peacekeeping force our species has ever known, and I ask for it by unanimous approval. So, two things. One, did I try to connect with them about my past? Absolutely I did. So I would like to invoke my stump speech. I invoked my dead son, including his other father is sitting here at the table. Like,
my question on that is, now, stump speech, I like as a last-ditch effort to get some advantage here, right? I admire it. My question is just, what is the fact about your past that you're trying to convince them of? And I don't think you didn't say something, right? I'm trying to get at that. Like, so I don't think it's that your son's dead, right? Because I think that everybody knows that. That's like, huh? What age of the icon?
I think the fact about my past isn't like an event. It is the fact that, like, I, Nasir Baydak, have lived for humanity from the day I, like, was born until the day I set forth, like, until this moment. Mm-hmm. And, like, I, while I'm not a voter in this body, I ask everyone here to trust that the only thing I have ever had at heart is humanity's best interest. Yeah. And I have shown everyone in this room that time and again.
All right, so I think go ahead and roll manipulate, and you can do so with advantage.
Pray for me.
This might be the most consequential role of the campaign.
Since the last time that you had a consequential role.
Okay, on the plus side.
Yeah, yeah, Haley, that was kind of fucked. The last time he had a plus slick with advantage on what we described as the most consequential role of the show.
I rolled 3 ones. Let's go, baby.
Oh my god. Okay. Oh my god. Okay. Oh my god. Okay. I only saw the ones. Oh my god.
Okay. I want an 8. 6 plus 1 is 7. Plus 3 is 10. Full success. I want to name full success. I want to name full success. Did I roll 2 ones? Yes, I did. Did
I'm sorry. The fucking 6 was the middle number, so it was like sandwiched between the ones. So all I saw was the ones.
It's okay. It's okay. It is a full success.
Oh my god.
Manipulate full success.
Dramatic.
Fuck me.
John's reaction was the same as mine would have been if he hadn't done it first.
Holy
Jesus.
Shit. Oh my god.
Okay. We are okay.
All right, let's do some box breathing. 4 seconds breathe in. 4 seconds pause. 4 seconds breathe out. 4 seconds pause.
All right, we box breathed into the microphone.
Thank you.
That was really bad.
We did it. It's a full success. I don't know why you said it was really bad. It's full success. Full
that
success.
Was just very stressful.
Upping my slick from 2 to 3 was the best thing I ever did.
So before I say how the room reacts, after you finish, do you sit down or what does Nasir do next?
No, I think I stay standing since I just called for the creation of a galactic government by unanimous consent.
The correct etiquette is to remain standing there. Yes.
So I think what you see is, I think you see the delegates looking at each other. And I think from that, you can tell Nasir, like in the looks, right? I think it's them trying to gauge whether they're prepared to, I guess, like take a leap of faith, right? And trust each other in that. But I think the silence is cut when Reef Kasarek stands up and she says, Nasir, Leela, if this truly is to be a decision by every planet, I think it would be best to let the delegates discuss your proposal in private.
I think for a second, there is a question in my eyes that doesn't reach my face.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll look to Leela, and assuming she's not outraged, of course, I cede the floor to the honorable junior delegate from Eos. And there's a snarky smile on my face.
I think Leela was sort of expecting this and thinks it's actually probably best that we step away because people already view us as having meddled by putting this entire thing together. So I think she nods and sort of shuffles out with Nasir.
Back on the moon, Mara, I think you finished setting the device on the roof and make your way back down the stairs. And Arno, you make your way to the east side of the bunkers near the path that leads south back toward the entrance to production.
I wonder if we can cut just a couple of seconds before that.
Mm-hmm.
To where I was in my head seeing like the water rise.
Yeah.
Because I think when I snap back to Aventine 2B, I whisper under my breath, Shepherds.
Hmm.
And I make my way to the east side of the bunkers, but I hold my position.
Okay.
I'm so fucked.
What? No.
Yep, sure are.
So, Arno, I think you see that one development has occurred that makes this a slightly less, I guess, desirable tactical situation. And that is that the sentry who was patrolling up by the administration building has circled back around and is now standing outside the door on the west side of the production facility. So that's the one that's closest to the bunkers and is engaged in a conversation with another guard. And so the two of them are standing outside that doorway and, you know, looking outwards, but mostly focused on each other and speaking. I think this will make it difficult, though, for you to move from the bunkers either to that door or to the door on the south side of production. And so I'm wondering how you handle this situation.
I'm completely unaware of it. I am not thinking about the production building at all. I have my sights set on administration.
Huh. If that's the case, Mara, I think you make your way to the door on the south side of the production facility.
There I go.
Are you trying to enter or do you call Arno first? Or what's like, what's the move? What's the plan that you had in your mind before this happened?
So for the production facility, right? I know that I made some successful roles and got to peek behind the curtain, and I understood at the time it seemed like it had the least amount of people to know people, correct?
Yeah.
And I think for this one, there might be a good reason for me to pop inside and make sure that the LDD destroyer is well positioned. like if my role is still active and I can still kind of scope and see if there's no people in there, I might give it a shot and try to like gently break in.
So I think, I mean, you already rolled scope it out twice. I think I'm inclined to be a little generous with this. I think that you, before I think I had told you that there was, that you had not detected personnel inside the production facility. It seems like the focus, maybe it, that it had been evacuated as a result of the ship crash, or that those resources have been kind of redirected to the crater. I think you do detect one thing that's different, and that's just you wouldn't have had line of sight on this, but you do detect that outside that door on the west side of the complex, there are those two guards standing there and having the conversation. You know, I don't know if you know that, like Mara, right? Like Lauren, obviously you heard me say that. I think you just see the two blips outside the door, right? That you understand that there are people outside, but I don't think that you have any indication that it's more likely that they enter the building versus continue patrolling outside the way they were before.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they aren't making any like immediate movements towards me, I still say the plan is try to kind of gently break in and get out of their potential line of sight.
Got it. Before we do that, just as one more question, the plan, as I understood it, was for you and for Arno to meet at the production facility, and that was kind of the spot where you would plant the last device, and then both of you would GTFO, right? What does Mara do in terms of that plan, or in terms of communicating to Arno? Did she expect to meet him already, or is it just, oh, we were going to meet inside the structure?
So I think that, you know, Mara hasn't heard anything negative from Arno yet, and on her end this has been all successful, so I think she doesn't think about it too hard. She just sends a quick, like, first device planted, second device planting in progress, and moves to execute the objective without, you know, waiting for Arno. I guess you could also interpret no news is bad news, but I think she's solely focused on getting the device planted, and you know, that's her main focus right now.
Got it. So I don't even think you have to roll for this. I think you put your slate up on top of the slate that's the door pad, and maybe we just see the numbers kind of flashing. It's like that elimination thing where you see that each of the digits ticking off one at a time. And then the door to the production facility slides open. But before we get to that, Arno, are you just moving straight to the administration building? Or what does this look like?
Yeah, so as I understand it, and John, correct me, I'm looking at your map. The production facility's west entrance is just south of the administration entrance, but a little further back.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I'm going to make my way to the outermost column of bunkers behind the top rightmost bunker, which would put me a little northwest of the administration entrance. Mm-hmm. And I think that should give me line of sight to like the two guards that are talking in front of the production facility entrance. And I want to gauge whether or not I can time just making a dash from where I am to the administration entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just ask, have I received Mara's message?
I mean, I think if she sent it, you received it, right? There's nothing that would have interfered with it. I'll put it that way.
Okay. So I think as I'm looking at them, I see the message come in and I reply, go without me. Something came up. We'll regroup. Send.
So I think if you're trying to move from the bunkers to the administration building and time it, I think I'll give you one of two options. I think it's either act quick, and that's plus slick again, or it's scope it out, and it's plus calculating.
Can I persuade you to let me take Juggernaut for this? And I think the context is not, oh, this is mechanically advantageous. It is fine. It's actually just, I think Arno is possessed and just wants to make the beeline. I think a little more finesse would be more appropriate over here. But there's like an urgency that's overcome him. that he has to get into the administration building.
Yeah. I will let you do that. I just want to flag that that will like discharge this move and you won't be able to use it in another situation then. Is this the time you want to use it?
Yeah, I think I want to.
All right. So go ahead and discharge it. And yeah, you can roll plus stalwart. Cool. Bruh. This was an insane decision for other reasons.
Yeah.
I'm leaving your ass behind.
That's fine. That's an 11.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shit, dicks. Okay, cool.
I just want to note for everybody that on the 7-9, the automatic consequence, the GM has no choice in the matter, is that you mark a stress.
Ha!
That was unhinged,
that
right?
That was close.
I know.
All right. So for Juggernaut, when you move forward unflinching toward a goal through an immediate danger hazard that others cower from, you discharge the move and you roll plus stalwart. On a 10+, you're unstoppable and you can choose two. If you take harm, you can take -1 harm. You can clear or uncover a way through for an ally and they'll have advantage going forward to following you. And you unquestionably reach your goal. Since I don't think there's a way that you would take harm in this situation, right? That wasn't really on the table unless things went really bad. I'll let you, if you want to pick the second two, I would let you save giving Mara the advantage for a later following you, if that makes sense, maybe as you're leaving the structure.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I think that would change what that looks like, if that makes sense, but I think that that, you know, that works, so.
Okay. So I will take you unquestionably reach your goal, and I will gladly accept your offer here. And as Arno's running, there's a pulsing in his head, and his breathing gets really heavy. And as he's making his way to the entrance to the administration building, his vision flashes between running through shallow water and the landscape on Aventine 2B.
It's like holding you back, like from the weight of the water almost?
Yes. John, I have a question. Mm. I have a mechanical question for you. I have 4 gear slots. I have used 2 of them. And I've declared previously that I might bring 2 things with me, but I have not yet used them. I, rules as written, use something that I had not previously declared for one of the 2 unused gear slots? That would plausibly be on my person. I'm not saying I'm going to pull a cannon out of nowhere, but I have something else up my sleeve.
So sorry, are you asking mechanically if you can use something that's not in your gear list? Or are you saying, can you use something that's on your gear list that wasn't one of the 2 things you said? I told you that you could do that for what it's worth. I wasn't going to hold you to the stuff.
Okay. I'm really sad that I used my birthday question earlier, John, because what I'm asking you for is not on my gear list, but was at one point. John, I'd like to know, the last time I wore this suit was on Kairos. I don't think I emptied the pockets. Oh. Do I still have that tube of glue?
No. Oh. I mean, I don't think I can give you that, Mike. I know it was the birthday thing because I explicitly told you in that episode that I wouldn't let you do that. That was like on Mike that you could not do this.
Yeah, but he's asking again closer to his birthday tomorrow.
I know.
Okay.
I don't think the glue is going to be necessary for this.
I understand. Okay, that's fine. Okay, well, I thought I would ask anyway. I hope this makes the final cut.
I don't know. We'll see. So, Mara, I think we cut to you inside the production facility. And I think before I describe what you're seeing inside, I think you get the message that Arno sent. Do you react to that in any way, or do you just dismiss it?
I think even though it might, on its face, appear a little ominous, the fact that he can respond and is, like, taking the time to say that he's, like, dealing with something, I think that she's going to choose to view that as, like, whatever he's dealing with is inconsequential and also not obstructing him from responding. Yeah. So...
I mean, I feel like Arno's kind of the master of sending like ominous text messages and unnecessary situations also. So
it's more concerning that it wasn't just a thumbs up, but you know, like heightened circumstances, more words, more verbosity. Super.
So I'm wondering what you think the inside of this production facility looks like. In terms of the structure as a whole, right? I think you're moving your way forward and you're in one of these round structures, right? These round rooms. I think the ceiling has these rectangular glass panes that are kind of, or like almost like grapefruit slice shaped, I guess. I don't know what that that shape is, but like letting light in through the ceiling, and the edge of the circumference of it has overlapping triangles, like one right side up and another upside down, to make the windows that circle the room, other than the doors and the hallways. And I'm wondering what we think the machinery or the other objects inside of this room look like that are making these devices.
I'm thinking that these are incredibly delicate instruments, right, to put together. And so I think there's maybe only 2 to 4 like fabrication areas, if you will, because they're not, this isn't like an assembly line situation, right? Like, it's just, they don't have, to my understanding, they don't have that many of these machines. But what I'm guessing is it's, let's say, 4 general areas. And then there are almost like a circle on the ground and a pedestal, perhaps, where these things can be placed. And then we see like concentric circles of different machinery moving outwards. So like the kind of very large things, if you're imagining like the way like cars are put together, right? The kind of like giant mechanical pinchers or something like that. But even like big versions that can handle large, heavy pieces of machinery, small ones that might do like delicate like circuitry or soldering. And I don't think they're active right now, but I think it's just, I think Mara is impressed with the level of sophistication, because this is her first brush with Aventine technology at its like highest form, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think she's like in awe of what they're able to do and capable of in this kind of desolate location and how they've utilized their resources.
Yeah. And maybe it is like, you know, we had talked about, I guess, like Kyros's vision of humanity, right? And what he thinks Aventine means. And I think maybe what strikes you then is it is impressive, right? That's maybe that's the point that strikes you. You know, Mara, I have always taken to be, and maybe this is, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but as someone who believed that the Republic and that idea is how great things are accomplished, right? That it was the Republic that created the ability to feed the Verge, is the Republic that created interstellar travel, and that those were the things that we accomplished when humanity was united. And, you know, I don't know if it's like doubt, but maybe at least curiosity that's caused by seeing something like this, even if it's for, you know, I think a purpose that Mara finds repulsive.
Yeah, I definitely, I don't want this to come off as Mara being like, oh, these like poor space idiots don't really know what they're doing. I think that is like, it's almost like 0 to 100. Like, she's never been on Aventine. She's never seen their cities or their populace. She's been in the Verge, but doesn't really ascribe that to Aventine. So it's like immediately the first thing she comes face to face with is like what could be argued as the pinnacle of their technology. And I do think it's like very intriguing and interesting to her.
Yeah. Where do you try to plant the device?
I think that it is, she's going to put it as central as possible, kind of try to make a judgment. I think these things are fairly efficient, and like the radii or whatever you want to call it, that they can send signal and destroy. But I think as she's kind of like walking around, she's got one ear and one eye listening and looking for sounds of other people, activity. But she's also picking out the best spot where she's going to drop this thing off.
So I think if that's the case, maybe you focus in on a workbench that is closest to the center of this kind of triangle of 3 circular rooms. So maybe it's on the kind of northeast side of the one that you went into. Do you try to conceal it underneath the workbench, or like what would be your approach for how to sort of place this on the structure?
I don't think she's trying to conceal it. I just don't think that makes sense, right? Once they know their shit's been wrecked, they're going to scour the place top to bottom. So there's nowhere she can really hide it that they won't find it.
I see. And what I just meant by that is, are you trying to do any effort to conceal it during the time that you're, you know, fleeing this facility to get back to the Valiant? Like, to buy you time for the timer to go off?
No, because I don't, there's nothing they can do, right? I'm monitoring the devices, and if they start to be tampered with or moved, then I'll set them off.
So there's this, like, right on top of the workbench is where you place it?
Yeah, sure. Kind of a big old middle finger.
So I think you put it there and you start to set it up. And at this point, I want to get back to Arno. What is it that you're trying to do inside the administration building?
On Emma Gomez's slate, there was mention of the ghost ship. And Aventine assumed that it was Terran, that it was something created by the Republic. I know that Aventine and the Republic did not create this. There's a lot I don't know, and what I don't have is a complete picture of all of the sightings of the ghost ship by Aventine. I don't know the breadth of their knowledge, and I don't have enough to go on to find out more myself. So I want to go. This is a top secret facility. I'm sure there's some communication here between whoever's in charge of this facility and Aventine, possibly even directly to Alpha. I want all the information I can get about the ghost ship. I want to find the Shepherds.
It's Haley. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the show. Okay, now listen in. The rest of the team is expecting me to tell you to share the podcast with, I don't know, I guess people who would like it or something. And yeah, tell your friends and family. Talk us up at work. Hell, tag us at Worlds Away Pod on social media. But here's what I really want. I want you to share us with someone you think would hate this. You know that person in your life. They get way too into the things that they dislike. They have a critique for everything. That's who I want. Compliments, they're fine. But what I really feed on is the spirit of the haters. Bring them to me. Oh, shoot. Hold on. They're coming back. Hold on. Okay. And you can find us online at worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening. Now, back to the show. Remember what I said. Haters.
So if that's the case, I think the next thing we see is the inside of the airlock opening up with a mechanical hiss as the door rotates around to open to the inside of the administration building. I think the first room that you're in is almost an entrance or waiting area. I don't want this to be misinterpreted as being something that's about creature comforts. I think there are a lot of metallic crates there and metal benches. I think the point is that just this is a space that is on the other side of the airlock that would allow people to be, you know, prepared to go in and out of this structure and to put supplies or other things that are taking in and out of the building. But I think you see past you in a narrower room to the back, there's a stairwell that leads up to the second floor. And I think you staying low and, you know, maybe your hand on whatever weapons you have are sneaking forward, I guess, creeping forward slowly, and you make your way up the stairs.
Before you go on, can I add some flavor to this?
Yeah, please.
I think that every other step that Arno takes, his vision, or rather his what he's seeing, changes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the boxes and the benches are still always there, but maybe there's a flash and he's back trudging through the water and it's rising. He feels a sense of urgency to like beat the water. The walls are missing. The ceiling is missing. Everything else, all the other furniture in this space is still there between the flashes. But every other step, it's just he's in the facility. He's in this rising water landscape and just going back and forth.
Yeah.
But he feels the need to like to outpace the water. He needs to get above it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that like compels you to climb the stairs, right?
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. So I think you get to the top of the stairs and through a set of sliding double doors and into what looks like a kind of command center. It actually has a large arched window that overlooks the rest of the complex. So sort of you can see out from that into the production buildings, which are sort of at that level or slightly below it. Past it, you can see the dormitory and the laboratories, and then into the crater where, again, you see the smoke from the ship crash. And this is maybe your first good look at this. But in front of that window are several large glass screens, ones that you could touch or flick or type directly on to access the computer systems of this complex. And so if you're trying to find information about the ghost ship, I think that you need to roll scope it out.
That's a 10.
Nice.
Holy fuck. What an episode.
I'm so excited to fail on the even more important roll. Every time we succeed, that's what I think is like
now, oh no.
It's just an even more important role to fail.
You know, fun.
No, take a more optimistic approach. The best part about succeeding in one role is having the opportunity to succeed in another.
So for scope it out, when you take time or use sensitive equipment to closely study an object, situation, or person, you roll plus calculating, and on a 10 plus, your investigation pays off, and you ask three questions from the list. And those are, where's my best escape route, way in or way past? What should I be on the lookout for? What's my enemy's true position? Who are right here is not what they seem. Who's really in control here? How could I best end this quickly? And who or what here could be a useful opportunity?
I have a meta request.
Okay.
I am begging you to ask who or what not here. Who or what here is not what they seem.
Oh, tell me why.
I think that you described Arno experiencing flickering realities.
Yeah.
And I think that that is really critical for Arno to get through. But also, I think it gives you an opportunity for... The dam is already breaking. The flood is happening physically and metaphorically. Psychically and metaphorically. But this is a chance to just... This is a chance for the levees to break.
Okay. So I think we've established that in his current state, Arno is not thinking about getting in, getting out. So that's off. I've never wanted to ask what's my enemy's true position more in my life. And that's a lock. Mm. That's absolutely getting asked.
Fair.
You got two more.
And I think who or what here could be a useful opportunity is interesting because there might be like a pseudonym or a key phrase or a way of that Aventine communicates that isn't immediately intuitive to pick up on for like finding more of these files or finding more of this information. So who or what here could be a useful opportunity? How could I best end this quickly is such an optimal play. And that's absolutely not where Arno's head is at right now. Who or what here is not what they seem. Let's fucking go.
Woo.
Woo.
So it's what is my enemy's true position? Who or what here is not what they seem? And
who or what here could be a useful opportunity?
Okay.
So I think before I answer those questions, I want to cut back to Ascension. Nasir and Lila, where are you waiting as the delegates discuss the proposals?
So I think we could have gone to either our like office in the Minerva Project building or anywhere else, but I think we're probably just waiting right outside.
Yeah, I think almost like weirdly for the moment, I am calm. And I think there is a faint smile on my face. And I'll just look to Lila. You did very well in there.
I think Lila has kind of been looking away, kind of zoned out. And at that, I think she looks up at him and just says, thank you. And she smiles a little bit, but then kind of goes back to staring out. And maybe where we're sitting, there is a window out to space. So she's staring out into space.
So I think maybe after a couple more minutes, you hear the door open slowly behind you. And you see Reef Kasarik say, "We're ready for you." So as you enter the room, I think you see the delegates all in their seats. Leela, I think you noticed that your proposal has an amendment to it. Whereas before, I think you said humanity must safeguard all species of life on the planets we inhabit. And this is electing the sort of second option for the manipulate role that's given to the GM.
Mm-hmm.
I think instead it says humanity will strive to safeguard all species of life on the planets we inhabit.
Ah, there you go.
And so I think you're assured by the fact that next to that, you see this, the initials or the signatures of every delegation. But I think you realize that this has been softened and it's kind of up to, I guess, the interpretation or the goodwill, to put it another way, of the people here to see that that is implemented.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was always going to be that. So if that's, you know, what they needed to add, that is what it is. So I think we take this as a dub.
I think then your attention shifts to the rest of the proposals on the board. And you see that every one of them has, again, the initials or the mark or the signature of each of the delegations, along with the new one at the bottom that says, humanity will establish an interplanetary council to implement these proposals. And I think that maybe it's Mateo actually stands and begins to applaud. And I think then he is followed one by one by all of the delegates until the entire room is applauding the two of you.
I start to cry. It's silent, but there are tears streaming down my face. Ladies and gentlemen, the founding of the Interplanetary Council of Humanity.
Arno, you tap the screen in front of you to wake it, and you see text start to appear on it. And I think you take your own slate and place it on top of a palm reader that rests on the console, and almost similar to what Mara's did with the door code or the numbers, you see a outline begin to form as the screen in front of you unlocks, and you see a file tree showing various pieces of information, data on this administrative computer. And as you scroll and tap through, eventually you find a directory labeled adverse sightings. And I think you open that. In that directory, and I think that the significance of this or the usefulness is something that might come to you a little later, you are able to find all of the records of Aventine's sightings, or at least of whoever's on Aventine's responsible for this facility, all of their sightings of what we've referred to here as the ghost ship, including in some cases pictures, in other cases reports. And it is a far more extensive reporting than what you or the Minerva Project had assembled. It includes eyewitnesses on several of the planets that you've visited, witnesses on planets that you haven't visited, and also reports taken firsthand by members of what you believe to be Aventine's intelligence services. And I think that these are organized not only by location, but also by date and by time, right? So they're assembled, or at least are sortable into a sort of chronology. But I think looking back, you find one that predates the others by several years, and it's one that stands alone. The date on that is a date that you remember, Arno, because that date is the date that you left your post not very far from this facility and went to rescue the crash shuttle on Aventine 2B. Earlier in the season, when Mendoza described that mission to you, she explained that there had been two shuttles one of which crashed, and that was the one that you rescued. The other presumably was destroyed before its mission could be completed. And I think as you open that file, you see that there is what appears to be a recording from a ship-mounted camera that would be present on a Republic military transport. And as you open that video and see images of a ship with two sets of wings slowly flickering out of existence, you realize that that is the exact same video that Shaw showed you at the very beginning of this campaign, which makes the first sighting of the ghost ship align not with Aventine's use of the devices in the Verge, or their what you believe to be their testing of them, rather with Earth's attempts to test the first device on Aventine. You also asked who or what here is not what they seem. I think as you look at this, you know, when you were running to this building, you said the word shepherds. And I think maybe that's where your mind goes. But what I want to know is, what does it look like when you realize that Leela messed with your head?
Juicy.
As Arno was searching through the files and glancing through documents and eventually reading them, the sound of the water has been getting louder and louder, and it finally reached the second floor. And now that he's found these documents, it felt like he was trying to keep his chin above the water, and it had finally gotten too high, and that first breath in of what was supposed to be drowning was timed with reading these documents and the realization that this is all wrong. And so when he takes that, when he inhales instead of water, it's like he's woken up from a nightmare and he's suddenly in the very quiet, very empty second floor of the administrative building. And the only thing he can think of is watching Leela paint the scene in front of him in the landscape, walking back to him and whispering in his ear, "You did that," before standing next to me.
I have one more question for you, Arno. Earlier, you told me that you left something behind. And what I want to know is, what does the name tag on a fleet uniform look like?